Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now we're going to talk with one of the leaders at the Discovery Institute. His name is Bruce Chapman, and in fact, he's the chairman of the board. He's listed as being co-founder of the Discovery Institute in 1991. Bruce, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Jerry.
Now, for those who might not have seen Ben Stein's movie Expelled, and they're not familiar with the Discovery Institute per se, tell us what that is and why did you see the need to help get it started?
Well, I saw the need to get it started because I thought that a number of what you might call underappreciated principles of our country could speak in a lively fashion to the problems of today. And that got me going on free speech, among other things. And one of the things that I found when I was examining that issue is that when people try to challenge Darwin's theory, they get shouted down, or shut down. And so I thought, as somebody who supposed at that time that Darwin's theory was correct, I thought this was still rude and unnecessary. Why did they do that? So I started defending a couple of people who were doing that. Well, then I actually decided that I would look into the issue, and I started talking to scientists on both sides, and I realized that the scientific case that I had learned in high school and college was wrong, and that intelligent design was a better explanation for the course of the universe and the development of life than blind chance operating with natural selection, as Darwin's theory holds. So that's what got me started. And we didn't start out with this Center on Science and Culture. That came about 4 or 5 years later. And it's been interesting because it's become a motif for what we do. We see design in a number of areas. I just finished a book called Politicians, the Worst Kind of People to Run the Government, Except for All the Others.
Yeah.
And it talks a lot about my own experiences, having been a local, state, and national official, elected and appointed official. So that, you would think, has nothing to do with intelligent design. But you look into it and you find out, as I explained in the book, that the origin of our term political science goes back to Germany at the late part of the 19th century, when Americans decided to get some graduate school education. They went over to Germany, which had graduate schools. We didn't have any at that time.
Hmm.
And they got really intrigued by this German idea, which was abroad then, to have politische Wissenschaft, political science, to make Darwin's theory into a science of politics, which they did. And so a lot of mischief was unloosed at that time. Race theory, eugenics came from it. I read just recently in the New York Times about the racial background of discrimination in Germany before World War I. Forget about World War II. It was already going on before World War I, and it led to genocide in some of our colonies in Africa, and that's how they got started. So what I discovered, and I elaborate in this book, is that design, as our founders had, is a much better way to plan your politics than to try to think you're doing something scientific. And we do the same thing in economics. We do with George Gilder. We do the same thing in technology, and that's a very important controversial field right now. But of course, it's true mainly in the natural sciences.
Huh. And you used to work in the Reagan administration.
Yes, I did. I was the director of the U.S. Bureau of the Census, and then I was in the White House working as the head of the planning office, and then I was U.S. ambassador to the United Nations organizations in Vienna.
When you were talking a moment ago about even before World War I, not to mention World War II, the German application of things that even led to genocide in some of their colonies, you're basically talking about Darwinism, or at least their understanding of Darwinism applied. In other words, there are superior races, And then there are inferior races that have not evolved as much, supposedly. That's what they thought. And so it was like, okay, let's, you know, honor and exalt the supermen, and at the expense of the Untermenschen, those who haven't evolved as well. Is that correct? I mean, in other words, is there a link between Darwin and that, those terrible racist policies?
Oh, absolutely. You can, as a matter of fact, I would recommend to your listeners that they go online and look up Human Zoos. Human Zoos. This is a new film by Discovery Institute's associate director of the Office of our sciences, is John G. West, and it's an excellent book. He's also done some other work on it. And there was a time, believe it or not, when even in America, pygmies from Africa were exhibited like animals in a zoo. And this came directly and explicitly from race theory, which derived from Darwin. If you go back to, it's interesting, the New York Times story said nothing about the Darwinian roots. They just said it was racist. They just assumed that racism comes from somewhere. The racism may be natural. People are inclined to think ill of people who are different from themselves. However, to put a scientific or a pseudo-scientific gloss on this is what Darwin's theory was used for. Ernst Haeckel was a scientist in Germany, much revered there. His book, a pastor told me in Austria, actually, that before World War almost every house had a book by Ernst Haeckel as well as the Bible. Mm. In other words, they didn't see any contradiction. But Ernst Haeckel believed in race theory, and he had a chart that showed the races with the nice, tall, blonde Nordic man at the top, and then then literally apes at the bottom, and in between were black people. It's pathetic. But it was treated as true. And this was a way of justifying a lot of very bad habits and very bad thinking, not only in Germany, but also in America. That was the eugenics movement. So like I say, Jerry, this has a powerful force behind it. Now, I changed my mind by actually being open to the evidence. And one of the things that we find is that people who are open to the evidence, who will look at the books by our authors, will change their minds. And can I tell you a story about that?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, there's, speaking of Germany, there is a German entomologist that's a bug scientist, insect scientist, named Günter Beckley. He was a major figure in the scientific community of Stuttgart, where he was at the Museum of Natural History, and they asked him to run a display, an exhibit, celebrating the anniversary of Darwin's birth 150 years ago. I guess the publication of Origin of Species, his great book. And so he had a scale, like you see, to weigh things. And on one side of the scale, he put Darwin's theory, and then on the other side of the scale, he put four or five books that he had purchased from online, I guess, from our authors in favor of intelligent design. And in this scale, the way he rigged it was that Darwin's theory weighed more than the others. He said that was very funny. Everybody thought that was great and so forth and so on. The exhibit was a success. He said, then having bought these books, I made a mistake. I read them. And he said, I realized I had the scales wrong because that intelligent design is much more persuasive than Darwin's theory. And then he changed his mind as a result of actually studying the matter. You wouldn't believe how lazy some scientists are. They think they pretend they're not, but we have a lot of scientific myths that go on until somebody is able to get things turned around. And he was ostracized by his colleagues. They weren't willing to read any of these books. And so he finally was driven out. He was driven into retirement, actually, which in Germany was you know, pretty well supported by the state, so he's now able to continue with us as a intelligent design proponent. He also had a religious conversion not long after that, which was powerfully motivated by what he learned.
That's Gunter Beckley, B-E-C-H-L-Y.
C-H-L-Y.
L-Y. And I understand that there was another gentleman named John Zmirak, Z-M-I-R-A-K. Tell us about him.
Well, he edited a book by Father Chabarek, Michael Chabarek, who is a Polish Dominican with a scientific, you know, with a large scientific background. He has a doctorate, but it's in theology. But anyway, he's written on the subject. Father Chabarek has written on the subject of the Catholic Church and evolution, how the Catholic Church has handled this issue over the years. And then also he wrote a book on, most recently, on Thomas Aquinas, the great scholastic thinker that's so influential, really, in both Catholic and Protestant history. But anyway, it was on Thomas Aquinas. Some people think that Aquinas would not like intelligent design, but what Father Chabarek shows is that he not only liked it, he found it totally compatible and would not have found Darwinism compatible. So he explains this lucidly and articulately. He got an editor, John Zmirak, who disagreed with him and thought this was nuts. But it was a job, he would do it. And so he, at the end of it, he did a nice job of editing it. But at the end of it, he confessed in writing in an article on The Stream, the website The Stream, mm-hmm. that he had done something. He recommended it to his readers. He said, "I've done something that almost never happens. I changed my mind." And it was a refreshing it was a refreshing experience. I don't know why so many people are afraid to change their mind given new evidence, particularly when it's, I think really in the case of the Darwinists, they have an a priori, a prior commitment mm-hmm. to atheism. They even say that, so that anything that disturbs their anti-faith is just something they can't stand. Well, we have the opposite situation, which is that we have a lot of young people who get a biblical education in grade school and Sunday school and so forth. Then they go to college, and their Sunday school faith is overturned by very skeptical professors who teach them that that's wrong. They never hear the scientific case mm-hmm. for intelligent design. They only hear the case for Darwinism. And I will have to tell you, as somebody who had that experience going to college, I didn't lose my faith. Oddly, a lot of people are able to hold two concepts in their mind that are opposite at the same time. But I did have the experience of hearing all the arguments for Darwin's theories, almost all of which have been debunked, even in many of the textbooks since then. But I carried that view on and that prejudice on until, as I said, I got to defending a free speech situation, and I've always been in favor of letting people speak. So it happens, but we need people to have an open mind.
Well, you know, I'm reminded of a phrase, and this is from a different context, but Gary Bauer, who also served in the Reagan administration, said recently, he said, "The left doesn't want to win the debate. The left wants to cancel the debate." So you only hear the one side of the thing. We have time enough to have you give the title of your book again.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you. Yes, it's called Politicians, The Worst Kind of People to Run the Government, Except for All the Others.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a spin on what Winston Churchill said, you know, famously, that democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others.
Right.
And,
okay.
And I'm making a defense of our representative form of government, actually, which was designed by our founders.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. Discovery.org for more information. Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye.